Chapter 16. Fire on a Dragon's Tongue.
How did you know?
In the highest tower of Suladair, the historian of Margot Chastain peered at the man seated opposite him. The Silver Saint was halfway toward drunk now, three bottles of wine emptied, his lips rouged a delicious dark red. Gabriel looked up from the globe, the moth circling it, dragging a lock of hair away from brooding storm-grey eyes.
You just said it yourself, Chastain. I drank Phoebe near to death.
Not the secret of Dancer Blood, the vampire said. I mean, how did you know that all this effort was not in vain? All these miles, these trials. You could not even sense the blood you had given La Chance anymore. This is a world without pity, De Leon. It feasts upon the powerful and powerless alike. The Holy Grail of Saint-Michon was said to be imprisoned at the seat of Divock power, in the cold grip of the Black Art and the clutches of the Heartless. Even if you reached her, how could you know she'd be alive?
The last Silver Saint smiled sadly, staring at that fluttering moth.
You didn't know Dior La Chance like I did.
The vampire only scoffed.
That is no kind of proof, Chevalier.
For all you knew, that girl would be filling a shallow grave by the time you reached the coast. And yet, you were willing to march an entire nation to war on some vain hope.
Hope is for fools, historian.
Gabriel met the vampire's eyes.
Hope gets you killed. Hope walks into the fire. Faith leaps over it. I didn't hope Dior was alive. I believed it.
And you were willing to risk your life for that belief?
Gabriel shrugged.
What the hell else is worth dying for?
You mortals fascinate me,
the vampire breathed, shaking his head.
Your lives burn like candles in a storm. One moment ablaze, the next...
Jean-Francois blew a puff of breath, as if to extinguish a flame.
Had I but a handful of years ahead, I would guard each one like a dragon his gold. And yet, most of you fools act as if wed to your grave.
The last Silver Saint looked at the seven star on his palm, the name on his fingers.
I'd rather die for something that matters than live for nothing at all. And because a man survived long enough to have a grey beard and wrinkles means not that he's actually lived. To live is to risk, to fear, and to fail. A man must dance on the dragon's teeth to steal the fire from its tongue. Most are burned alive in the attempt. But better to dance and fall than to never have danced at all. Pity not the man who dies too soon, but the one who lingers too long.
For those men who pass peaceful in their beds, who slip one night soft into sleep and wake never more, can they be said to have been awake at all? The vampire looked the Silver Saint over, toe to crown. His grey eyes were ablaze, pinpricks of light burning like long-lost stars.
You turn into something of a poet when you're drunk, De Leon.
Better a poet than a fucking minstrel.
Jean-Francois ran his quill across ruby lips, curling in the smallest of smiles.
I wonder what else you might turn into with enough encouragement.
Gabriel lifted his empty cup.
Get me another bottle and find out.
Smiling broader, the historian of Margot Chastain closed the tome in his lap with a heavy thump. Reaching into his frock coat for a silken kerchief, Jean-Francois stoppered his ink bottle and began cleaning the nib of his quill with customary fastidiousness. Gabriel raised one brow, still toying with the stem of his goblet.
Going somewhere?
Jean-Francois sighed.
Back to hell.
Gabriel frowned.
I wasn't done yet, Chastain. We're almost at the best part.
Be that as it may, De Leon, I fear you are near to overtaking your dear sister's recountings. And while the margin by which I prefer your company to hers be not measured in droplets but oceans, if we swim too much further, I fear we might drown the drama. The vampire smiled.
And unless you were about to bend Phoebe Adonzer over the nearest table and make her say, please, again, your definition of the best part differs from mine.
You're a strange one, cold blood.
Is it so strange? The historian asked, chocolate eyes sparkling. To live vicariously? To take joy in your joy and quicken as you quickened? To envy you?
Envy me?
The last silver saint burst into laughter, raucous, mirthless, shaking so hard he lost his breath. He hung his head, shoulders heaving, laughter gone silent as he tried to bring it to heel. And at last he leaned back, coughing, wiping tears from his eyes.
My life is shit and misery, historian. My country is in ruins. My wife is gone, my daughter's beside her. And now I linger in this cell, dancing for your fucking amusement, at the mercy of the very monsters who have taken everyone I have ever loved away.
He shook his head in wonder.
What in the name of Almighty God have you to envy?
That you may love at all, de Leon.
Jean-Francois tilted his head, pouting in thought.
Perhaps that is why you mortals burn so fierce, because you know the flame must be so brief. For we immortals, there is only loss. All affection fades. Everything dies. Only the blood brings true peace. And you know that joy too, that perfect moment, as darkness is riven crimson and we feel truly alive.
The historian looked the last silver saint over, smiling.
But you are also a man. You feel as a man, Gabriel. Live and love and lose as a man. One foot in two worlds, the suffering and bliss are both at your behest.
The historian finished cleaning his quill, slipped it away in the wooden case marked with the sigil of his house. Climbing to his feet, he walked to the silver saint's side. Reaching out with one pale hand, feather soft and iron hard, he caressed Gabriel's smooth cheek.
You are beautiful, mon ami. How I wish we had met under different circumstances.
Gabriel said nothing, mute and still, though the historian fancied he heard the silver saint's pulse run swifter at his gentle touch. Jean-Francois sighed then, tossing golden curls back from his face as he lifted his chin.
But duty calls, and hell awaits.
The vampire stalked toward the door, tome held under his arm.
Jean-Francois!
The monster stopped, a small smile etched on pallid lips. He turned to the man still sat in his chair, hollow eyes and empty goblet, silver gleaming on tattooed fingers. The silver saint seemed to struggle with some silent enemy, dragging a shaking hand through his hair. And when he spoke, it was the voice of a man staring at the executioner's axe.
I'm thirsty.
The monster's smile widened.
I shall have Meline see to your needs, Silver Saint.
Jean-Francois swept from the room, into the corridor where his majordomo awaited, clad in her black brocade. She stood with six thrall swords and the capitan, the big man's hand at his sword, sharp eyes on the cell door, as the Marquis closed it behind him. Straightening his lapel, Jean-Francois turned to his thrall.
Bring our guest another bottle, Meline.
The woman lowered her gaze, skin prickling.
You do not wish me to accompany you below, master? Alas, I must forego the pleasure of your company for the sake of courtesy, beloved. Have no fear. Good Capitaine Delphine shall see to my safety. And should I have other needs, I will make do with Dario and... Oh God, what is her name? Yasmir? Jasmine, master. Ah, of course, Jasmine.
The vampire took his majordomo's hand, kissed her knuckles, one at a time.
What would I ever do without you, my love?
The woman blushed,
dipping into a deep curtsy. Jean-François reached into his pocket and placed a small black mouse upon the floor. With a glance to the capitaine, the Marquis spun on his heel and descended the stair, accompanied by the thralled cohort. Dario and Jasmine awaited him at the tower's base, falling into step behind, one carrying an unlit lantern, the other a fresh bottle, filled to the brim with warm, lush red. Down, down through the wending dark the company slipped, the Marquis running a red tongue over his lips. Dawn was approaching. The scent of Dario's skin and Jasmine's hair threaded the gloom around them, and the thought of a swift and sighing meal before bed had Jean-François's skin a-tingle. But desire was smothered at the thought of his mother waiting above, the monster lurking below. And at last, deep in the keep's bowels, below the reach of all light and laughter, he drew to a halt outside silver-clad doors. Taking the key his dame had entrusted him from his frock coat, he handed it to young Dario. "Do the honours, love?" The handsome lad bowed, wincing as his hands touched the silver lock and chains, slipping both free. The soldiers pushed the cell door wide, emitting the hymn of running water, the perfume of old blood, a sudden shiver of fear on the historian's marble skin. "Come swift if I should call, Capitaine," Jean-François murmured. Delphine bowed, and with a glance to Jasmine, Jean-François stepped into the cell. The lantern on the thrall's platter was the only illumination, a thousand stars refracting on dark, rushing waters. Jean-François took a seat in his leather armchair on the river's edge, while the young woman placed the lantern atop the table, bottle and goblet beside it.
"Will there be anything else, master?"
Jean-François's eyes were fixed across the water as he murmured reply.
"Merci, no. See to Mélanie, beloved. She may require assistance, depending how thirsty the good chevalier decides he actually is."
Jasmine curtsied, dark curls tumbling about her face. And, never turning her back, always a clever thing, this one, she retreated, the door shut and locked behind her. Jean-François's gaze never wavered, chocolat eyes unblinking. He could see her now, a shadow hovering on the cusp of lantern's light. A soft whisper of bare feet on stone beneath water's babble. The softer hiss of hunger as the Marquis cracked the wax seal on that new bottle, releasing a bloody fragrance into the frigid air.
"You are a brave man, Marquis," came a whisper.
Jean-François smiled, filling his goblet.
"I am not a man, Mademoiselle Castilla. And if you believe it requires courage simply to sit in the same cell as you, you are as confused about the relationship betwixt jailed and jailer as you are about heaven and hell." "You misunderstand. We do not speak of your presence in this cell with us."
Selene stepped into the trembling light, and Jean-François prickled at the sight. Long, midnight blue hair, jet-black eyes, silver cage imprisoning those dreadful teeth.
"I speak of leaving my brother alone in his with one of yours."
"Your concern is touching, but entirely unnecessary. Dawn approaches on traitor's feet, and I would have the telling of this chapter done before the sun rears its head."
"Why the hurry?"
The monster took one step closer, head tilted.
"You said your mistress had time abundant. Can immortals not take forever to sing our songs?"
"Forgive me, mademoiselle." He raised his goblet in grim toast, a cold smile at his lips.
"But I do not find your company that pleasant." "If we manage to cross this water, little Marquis, it might prove very pleasant."
The monster took another step closer, black gaze on his.
"For some of us, at least."
Jean-François made a show of rolling his eyes as he sipped from his goblet, hand steadier than it felt. The blood was lush and warm, heavy on his tongue, banishing the chill he felt crawling up his spine as the abomination's eyes slipped to his throat.
Your brother has been most accommodating, Mademoiselle Castilla. But I fear if we proceed much further, your paths shall stumble over one another.
He set his goblet aside, opened his tome.
Will you continue your tale willingly, or shall you prevaricate until I am forced to threaten you again?
There seems little sense keeping silent while Gabriel bleats like a docked lamb.
The monster's eyes flickered to the table beside him.
But talking is thirsty work.
The historian inclined his head, tossing the bottle across the river. 30 feet it sailed through that dark, green glass gleaming in the lantern light, a pale hand snatching it from the air. The last Liathe lifted his gift, upending it long enough to take a mouthful, then two. But she refrained from finishing the lot, tongue sizzling as she licked the bars of her silver muzzle clean. And placing the half-empty bottle beside her, she took a seat at the very river's edge, legs crossed, peering at him across the waters.
"So where were we?" she whispered. "A hound boy and his ever after, a capitain and a black thumb, a grail and a worm. Strange the way the pieces fit, stranger still the way they fall apart. To think the world's fate rested upon so few shoulders, so small, so young."
She looked toward the heavens, sighing soft.
"The Almighty moves in mysterious ways."
Jean-Francois drew his quill from within his coat, opened a fresh bottle of ink.
"Let us begin, Mademoiselle Castilla."
She sat silent for the longest time, staring at the ceiling as if looking into the face of her wretched god. But finally, Selene turned black and hungry eyes to him.
"No, vampire," she whispered. "Let us end."